Okay, thanks. Thanks to the organizers and the KITP and invite me here, give me such a chance to present my research on the intercellular calcium waves in glial cells. We know that the glial cells are playing an important role for neuron functions. Besides the neuron-to-neuron communication, there are two more pathways for communication for neuron system functions. One is glial cell-to-glial cell communication. The second one is between glial cell-to-neuron communication. For neuron system, the most important the lot of information are carried by the membrane voltage of the neurons. But for glial cell, people believe that the calcium concentration, calcium singular, is the most important messenger. Lot of information is carried by the calcium singular. So in this study, we focus on the intercellular calcium singular. It's a long-distance singular with slow spreading speed. First, we simply introduce the dynamics for intracellular calcium oscillation. This is a cell membrane. Within the cell, we know there are some ER pool with high calcium concentration. Now, if there are some messengers, for example, ACH binding on the receptor on the ER, on the cell membrane, then they can release the IP3 messenger. The IP3 messenger can binding on the IP3 receptor on the ER membrane. This receptor is a calcium channel. Once IP3 messenger binding on this IP3R channel, the channel is open and the calcium release out. However, if the calcium concentration in the cytosolic space is high enough, the calcium can binding on the IP3R channel and this channel is closed. Then at the same time, the calcium can be pumped back into the ER pool. In this case, so it means at a certain regime of IP3 concentration, we can observe the intracellular calcium oscillation. Now, here I show you the experimental data for intercellular calcium waves. This, if we mechanically stimulate this cell, then the red means a high calcium concentration. We can see the calcium not only see an oscillation calcium in this cell, but we can see the calcium can spread out, forming the intercellular calcium waves. Now, this morning, the first speaker showed that suppose there is a gap without any gap junction, then we can still see the calcium spread out, spread to this side. So there are several pathways to cause the intercellular calcium wave. As this morning, they showed one way is the messenger diffuses through gap junction. One is diffuse through the extracellular space. In our study, we focus on the red glial cell. For such a for such a seal, people believe that the intercellular wave is mainly induced by the IP3 diffusing through the gap junction. So suppose if we have a mechanical stimulation on this cell, and then a lot of IP3 messenger can be generated, and then it's diffuse down to the stream cells. The IP3 can induce the calcium oscillation. So this is a basic idea for the intercellular calcium wave in red glial cells.
This would mean it wouldn't propagate through a gap, like you showed in the last slide.
Pardon?
This means it would not propagate through a gap in the cell.
The IP3 propagates through the gap. The last big, yeah, this is some other different type of glial cells. Yeah, so the coupling dynamics is spaces specific. Now here, I show you the experiment data. This is downloaded from the website by Sanderson. You see they stimulate here, and then we can see some the calcium spread out, and then the time lapse, so you can see some oscillation. Now they stimulate the central cell at the cell which is nearby the mechanically stimulated cell. They find the wave, the calcium wave responding like this. Fast burst, then high calcium plateau, lasting for more than 160 seconds. And far away from the stimulated cell, they find this and this kind of two types of calcium responding waves.
For the
three diagonal
in three
different locations.
Yeah.
Wait, I don't understand.
So
just explain that exactly. What the distance
going?
And the time axis is also shifted.
Or this is cell quite close to the stimulated cell. And this is a little bit far from maybe one or two cell distance, far from about two cell distance from the stimulated cell. This is several cells far from the stimulated cell.
When was the initial?
Okay, they stimulate, I think, from time zero, from this time.
The first peak is the propagated wave. That's the
W
is the propagated
wave, and then each individual cell starts its own oscillatory cell. So yes, indeed, the time axes are quite different in the three.
That's right.
Okay. So, yeah. This experiment is done by
done by them. Right. But I mean, if you put them all on the same time, then one could figure out how long it took the wave to propagate.
Sure.
Okay. So here, from this different respondents, we can see that if we stimulate the central cell, the IP3, lot of IP3 messengers is generated. And this means, because this cell is close nearby to the stimulated cell, it means they can get a lot of IP3 concentration. So with a high IP3 concentration, they fix they go to a fixed point. Now this is far from the stimulated cell. They will receive a less IP3 concentration. So it means at some regime, we have a oscillation caching behavior. Now, based on this idea, SLID had a model back in 1994. This is experimental data. And this is their modeling result. Now, we can see that this is the CL1. In his paper, the CL1 is a mechanically stimulated cell. At the CL2, you can see because the IP3 concentration diffused to this cell is too high, they have a fixed point and then die out. Far from the stimulated cell, the IP3 is somehow small and then cause a calcium oscillation. From this, if we compare the experimental to the modernist, this model is somehow quite good. But, okay, they published three papers. And here, this is their last one in 1998. Here, they plot the bifurcation diagram with the IP3 concentration. Here, this is low IP3 concentration, a fixed point for calcium. And beyond and between this regime of IP3 concentration, we can see the calcium oscillation. This is a maximal calcium concentration. This is a minimal. And far bigger than this one, then it go back to a fixed point. So if you stimulate the cell, they have a large of IP3. So for the CL1, they go along this fixed point and then die out. Because in the model, we consider IP3 degradation term. Naturally, the IP3 will come down to this point with time. Now, if we consider CL2, they have the oscillation. Because the IP3, the maximum IP3 is in this regime. If far from the, quite too far from the stimulated cell, the IP3 is always keep a lower regime, cannot beyond to this point. So we get, there is nothing. So this, it means, it explains why the mechanically stimulated calcium wave is always local, always involve only no more than 100 glial cells. Now, if we carefully compare the experimental data and the simulation data, one can see that their wave, the duration of responding wave, the length is less than 100. And if we, okay, how can I go back? Here, this is their first model. Their responding duration of calcium wave is 280 seconds. But the experimental data show that it's longer than 160 seconds. So it means there are some problem, there are some factors. The SLED model do not consider. In their model, they assume that there isn't a calcium-induced IP3 generation. The reason is that, suppose if we have a large calcium-induced IP3 generation term, then once there is a calcium oscillation, they will regenerate a lot of IP3 messenger. Then it can diffuse to the next cell, it always induces a calcium wave with a large IP3 concentration. So in the model, they don't think there is a calcium-induced IP3 generation. Now the question is that maybe there is a small term of calcium-induced IP3 generation term. They say that maybe this is too small, so in their model they ignored. And from this figure, we can also see that the bifurcation is supercritical hop bifurcation. Now, if we consider this model, one may think that one way to get a long duration of responding wave, we can design a bigger IP3 generation rate in the model for the central cell. Then, because if we have a high IP3 and too large IP3 generation, then we keep the same IP3 degradation rate, then we can get a longer calcium responding wave. Now the problem is that you can get the longer wave, but for the single cell, for the first cell, maybe when they relax to this regime, the oscillation regime, they will get some burst here. So here you see the cell one, they do not get a burst. They do not get any oscillation, even the IP3 decay from this point and pass by this regime down to this fixed regime. Why? Why here we do not see the oscillation? Because we have to, the experimental data do not show the oscillation. PL160. If we assume a large IP3 generation rate, then at this regime we will see an oscillation for the CL1. But in experiment we did not find that. So that's why here they always get a short responding calcium wave. Now, our research problem is that can we find a better model to get a long duration of responding calcium wave?
Without destroying all the other?
Yeah, and reproduce all this data. In our model, we have two important assumption. One is that we consider small calcium-induced IP3 generation term, not so large, small. And the second one, if we consider too large, then the wave is not local. It will spread to the whole slice. But if we consider small term, then it's still a local wave. And the second one is that here in our model, we assume the glial cell has a subcritical, So in our model, we assume that their bifurcation diagram is subcritical hop bifurcation. So it means the subcritical hop bifurcation means that there are bistability dynamics during the oscillation regime. Now, let me show you our result. First, let me introduce the model, our model. For calcium, we just use the Mirena model and modified some parameters. the Lisenz model is a simplification model of Dirac-Kasse model. So in the model, we assume each IP3 channel has three subunits. Each subunit has an IP3 binding site and an activating calcium binding site and inactivating calcium binding site. Here we for the calcium, we consider three fluxes. One is the calcium flux out through the channel, IP3 channel, and then they come bump back into the ERCL, and then also we generally leakage term. These two binding sites, their time scale is quite fast. So we use the steady state, and this guy, the inactivation gate, we consider it a variable. Second, this is the dynamics for IP3. As I said here, first we consider a small term, the calcium-induced IP3 generation term. As this equation. And second one, we consider another generation term, the JPLC beta. It's a constant. It's a constant parameter in our model. Suppose if the glial cell is in the glutamate, is applied with a glutamate or ACH or ATP, then we assume this has a large value. So, and then naturally we consider a degradation term like this. This is the copy from the Slade model. And this term is copy from the Hopf model. Now, for the experimental design of mechanical stimulation, the central cell is stimulated by the mechanical stimulation. Then it means in that cell they have a large IP3 generation rate. So for that central cell, we assume another one more term. This term in our simulation is we put this value is 1 for 15 seconds.
One
micromole per second, sorry. So now if we block the diffusing term for IP3 and calcium, then we get the point model. The bifurcation diagram is showing you this slice. Here we increase the PLC beta, it's a constant related to the glutamate application or ATP. And first, it's a fixed point. Without any stimulation, we assume it's the steady state is here. Now, if we increase this term, and then we get a bifurcation, so it means there is a calcium oscillation during this regime. And higher PLC beta value, it goes to a fixed point. Now, in our model, we assume that the bifurcation is subcritical bifurcation. So in this regime, we have a bistable dynamics, a periodic calcium oscillation coexisting with a fixed point, for this oscillation calcium, their period is from 40 to 12, which is same as the experimental observation.
And you did this by adjusting the parameters in the previous.
Adjust the parameters, but these parameters are somehow within the biologically reasonable. For example, this value. Yeah, I should mention that this is a calcium-induced IP3 generation rate. This one is quite small. We can see that, and this guy, the degeneration rate is 0.05. The experimental data for IP3 degradation rate is 0.058. That's the mean value, 0.058. Here we use 0.05. Now, we have the single cell model. Then we put a bunch of cells together to get a glial cell network. In the network, we have 13 by 13 cells. And each cell, their size is 24 micrometer. We always mechanically stimulate this central cell. The different cells, they are coupled by the IP3 diffusing through gap junction. The IP3 diffusing rate is proportional to the concentration of, to the difference of IP3 concentration at the two sides of the boundary, at the two sides of the cell boundary. So these are some important parameters. Calcium diffusion coefficient 20, IP3 diffusion coefficient 280. These two values are obtained from the experimental data. Now, from the experiment.
Where do those equations apply? Just inside the squares?
Yeah, inside each square. This is one cell, and where the calcium can diffuse in this each individual cell. And then between these two cells, we have this equation for the IP3 diffusing. Yeah.
So the previous equations were only inside the cell.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So this result is for the single cell.
No. But that has no diffusing.
No diffusing. Yeah. Yeah.
But the
this one.
These equations.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's here we do not. That's right. Yeah. And this term consider the gap junction diffusing. But here we did not write down that. Until here, I give the equation here. Okay, and this is the most important parameter for the intercellular calcium wave. Based on Sled's model, they said that, and he analyzed some experimental data, see that this value in the model should be less than 5. From the experiment, the estimated data is 0.04. But in the model, if we want to get a intercellular calcium wave, then it should be bigger than that, bigger than 0.5. Normally, in the model, they use 1 to 5 micrometer per second.
I thought they couldn't measure that. It hasn't been measured for
IP3. Yeah, but the problem is that for the real cell, the gap junction is locally. It's not, here we assume it's homogeneously distributed for the whole boundary. So there is a difference. And then based on such a estimate, such a assumption, SLED estimated it's less than 5. Yeah, so here we use 0.5. Now, this is our simulation data. For the, suppose, okay, at the time zero, we stimulate this cell, and then 5 seconds, then we have a high IP3 generated in this cell, and then it spread out through the gap junction to the whole network. IP3, and then the IP3 can generate a calcium oscillation. Here I show you the calcium oscillation. The white means a high calcium concentration. So we can see that the different patterns, different calcium patterns. And because we consider IP3 degradation term, then they will, the IP3 not only diffuse out to the network, it's also decrease to the fixed point, steady state. Okay, let me show you the
single run,
yeah. And let me show you the movie. Should be wrong, right? Yeah? No, not running. Okay, it's running. You see, the color is somehow different. The white means a high calcium concentration. This is a steady state, this color. We stimulate this cell and then we can see the calcium spread out. So you see, close to this stimulated cell, we see a calcium, high calcium plateau. And far from it, we see the calcium oscillation.
Why is this persist? You stop stimulating, no?
Yes, that stimulates here, and for 15 seconds, with a high IP3 generation rate in this cell.
Well, what's 15 seconds compared to this?
Here, each one BMP file, the time difference between two files is 0.1 second.
So 150 of those units?
This is 143 second, yeah. 140 second.
No, it's
40. There is 150 second. Right now.
So what about these colors?
Yeah, look. But anyway, you can see the diffuse, the calcium, the different calcium. Yeah, here, originally in my computer, it's just a white and black and gray, like that. But no color, I don't know why. In this computer, they show color.
There's no structure within each
one.
Within each
cell. Within each cell, there are some structure, the wave. We can see the intracellular wave, calcium wave. Now you say, suppose for this cell, the IP3 spread diffuse from this here to this here. So at first, we can see a high IP3 at this side and the low IP3 this side. So this, they will stimulate a calcium wave first this side and then here, right? So you can see intracellular calcium wave. We see individual cell.
I see that here?
Yeah, as you see the different color.
I thought color moving everywhere.
Because they are oscillation, so you can see some seems they wave back, but they are always oscillation. Okay, here we can take the trajectories. This is their experimental data. Now we mentioned that here is 160, and we wrote an email to Sanderson to ask him what happened. Beyond this time, they say they just record the to this time and they did not do more experiment, longer experiment. Now, if we carefully compare this, this is calcium, this is our IP3 in the model. Now, okay, let me discuss our model first. We stimulate the central cell. And then at the cell one, lot of IP3 can diffuse to the cell one, and then we get a high IP3 concentration. But for the next cell, now there are two factors to consider that. In the stimulated cell, we stimulate a fixed IP3 totally fixed IP3 concentration. Then it have such an IP3 messages have to be shared by the whole slice. So with the time the IP3 diffuse out, then the IP3 concentration should be decreased, right? And the second factor is that the IP3 is also degradation. So for the second cell, we get less IP3 concentration. And furthermore, it's smaller IP3 concentration we can get. Now, consider this one. We say for cell, they get IP3 in this regime. So they have a fixed point, go to the fixed point fast. With the IP3 decrease, they go along the fixed point to here, and then there is a narrow regime for the oscillation. Get some transient oscillation, and then back to the fixed point. For this one, because the IP3 increases slowly, so they have more time stay in this regime before go to the fixed point. So we see some oscillation first, and then here, and then back here along the fixed point, and then oscillation before back to the fixed point. For this one, the IP3 is small. The maximum is within this oscillation regime. So they go here and then back the IP3. So we can see the oscillation. For this cell three. Now for cell four, the IP3 is smaller, so maybe go from here and then back. We can see only four waves. Now we compare the experimental data with our simulation. Here.
Are the experiments for adjacent cells?
Is that cell?
Are
they
adjacent to the experiment?
Are the cells nearby? Or
they see that this is quite close to the stimulated cell. These cells are cells far from the stimulated cell.
That's not what you have here.
No, if we say the experiment, the real experiment, they can see the cell is distributed randomly, right? But in our simulation, we can use, this is what we can do. We assume it's, they are in two-dimensional.
No, I'm not talking about whether it's an ordered array or this order. I'm saying that you're just taking adjacent cells right next to each other. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
But I thought the experiment was one close by and then others far away. So.
Yeah,
and it all depends sensitively.
The experiments might not be exactly adjacent. But what is consistent is that the distance increases in electron buses.
Yeah.
What is consistent is that the.
Okay.
That the distance to the stimulation side increases from top to bottom.
Right.
Yeah, here, from here to here, the distance is somehow increasing.
Change of behavior is similar to the
experiment. Yeah.
But it seems quite sensitive to the space in the simulation.
For our simulation, it's symmetry, right? But between this, in this regime, they get the similar, they are somehow transient from this to this, and from this to this, they get a similar behavior.
What you're saying is that there's a big transition from cell 2 to 3. There's nothing in between. The experiment doesn't make it more smooth.
Right.
And a different length.
Okay. And now, if we consider this, let me see. This cell, down to the 1. It's somehow between the cell 1 to cell 2. So we have some, that's right, we have some patterns between this to this. And if we carefully compare the duration here, this is 160. Here, this is 170. So, we can come here to here. It's based on this, we predict that we can observe some oscillation beyond here. Yeah, and in fact, if we see this one, if we see there are similar, we see this. This is experimental data. They have some oscillation. They have some similar observation in the experiment. Yeah, after a fixed point, and then. Okay. Now, here, we discuss the effect of diffusing parameters on waves. This is CO from 1, 2, 3, to 5, 6. And the red line representing a high calcium. And the white means it's a low calcium. So suppose this, you see a high calcium for a long time. And here you see a wave, and a wave in this case. So this is for the. So we plot the calcium responding for several waves, for several cells with time. This is our, this is result with our standard parameters. Now, if we plot the calcium diffusing coefficient, and we see that the responding wave with the same mechanical stimulation, they are similar, quite similar. So it means the intercellular calcium wave is insensitive to the calcium diffusion coefficient. Now here, in our model, the IP3 diffusion coefficient is 280. We decrease to 10. The wave is somehow different. They only propagate to the fourth cell. But here, it's go to the Oh, yeah, sir. Yeah. So it's somehow sensitive to the IP3 diffusion. Now, we compare the, we check this parameter, this is the IP3 diffusion rate through the gap junction. If normally standard parameter, we use 0.5, decrease to 0.1, it change a lot. If we increase to 1, then it means the calcium can diffuse to the nearby cell faster. And so we can get a less short duration of calcium responding wave. So this data suggests that the IP3 diffusion coefficient through the gap junction is the most important parameter to determine the intercellular calcium wave. And by the way, with the standard parameter, our model shows that there are only 70 cells to show the calcium wave. And the experimental data show that there are less than 100 glial cells involved in calcium responding. Now we consider another experimental design. We just apply the glutamate for the whole slice or culture. Confusing. Okay. This is experimental data done by Connor Bell early in 90. Because we here, this means they at some glutamate concentration, they have this oscillation. We downloaded the result from the website, but it's this figure is still bad. Here means the oscillation. And at another glutamate concentration, we can see some oscillation and then relax to a fixed point. I believe so. They do not clearly see that. But here they see that with a quite large glutamate application, then they jump to the fixed point. This is our model. In our model, the glutamate is the increase, the application of glutamate means a large PLC beta constant. So if we increase this, we can see if we increase the beta in this regime, we can get an oscillation calcium wave. If this value is a little bit larger than this parameter, then before it goes to the fixed point, there are some oscillation, there are some transient, oscillation transient. Now if we get a quite large beta, then it jumps to the fixed point quite fast. Now this is another experiment design. First, the mechanically stimulate the central cell here, I think. Maybe here, I'm not quite sure. At zero, time zero. And then at this time, they add the ACH application for the mechanic stimulation is for the central cell, but the ACH is a kind of perfusing. So it's added for the whole slice. Now in the experiment, they find a different responding patterns. Now based on our model, we can the ACH is also simulated by a large PLC beta parameter. Now in our model, based on our model, we suggest that there are two kind of this bonding behavior. One is that if the SH, the ideal SH is in this regime, then we have this kind of different responding patterns. If we SH is too large and then drive the system in the fixed point, we have this kind of responding patterns. Now, for example, if we see this, the mechanic stimulation stimulator wave first, and then after adding SH, the frequency increase. Similar behavior you observed here. This is the mechanic stimulated wave. And then after here, okay, there is a. Here at this time, we add at the SH, then it means we turn the PLC beta from 0.12 increase to 0.13 at this time. So the frequency is increased a little bit here. And if we compare this one, the mechanic stimulation put the calcium in a high, we think, we allow you put into a high calcium concentration. And then after the SH, they get the oscillation. So same as this, it's a high calcium concentration. After we add it, then it go back to the oscillation. Suppose here, the calcium.
But I don't understand why I say it's a high. Isn't this measuring the calcium concentration?
Yeah.
So it's low. It's lower than when you have the oscillation.
Oh, here, right? Are you talking about here? This is a high calcium concentration. And then we find the oscillation.
Isn't this directly measuring concentration?
That's right. This is a simulation data.
No, I understand, but you're saying it's higher than the back, than the bottom.
Yeah, that's right. Higher than the bottom. So we miss the fixed point that the bottom related to this one. Okay, for this example.
It's not high compared to the peak.
Oh, no, not a peak.
It's just
the average. Yeah. Sorry. So for this example, the calcium induced a wave, but the SH is too high, so drive the whole system to the fixed point. So we can get this. So this is similar like this. In our model, we predict these two more patterns. It means a little bit far from the stimulated cell, we have a oscillation. And after the application of SH, a high SH concentration, they will go to the fixed point, but there is an oscillation transient. Now, far from the stimulated cell, there is low response, but the SH can initiate a transient oscillation and then fixed to a high calcium plateau. Now, this is our simulation movie. First, we have a mechanic stimulation, and then this is still the mechanic stimulation. Okay, after 20 seconds, 200, we apply the ACH, means we increase the PLC beta to a high value and then?
Everywhere,
that's right. First, they stimulated this cell and they will increase everywhere. They increase the PLC beta is in the oscillating regime. So we can always see the oscillating pattern. So it's somehow like there are two patterns, they are overlap. One is the mechanically stimulated wave. One is the ACH stimulated wave. They are overlap. The last experimental design is they add the glutamate first, and then after some time later, they stimulate mechanically the central cell. There are some different responding patterns. This done by Charles, right? But now we try to reproduce this data. And suppose here the glutamate stimulate some waves. This means in our simulation, we put the PLC beta a little bit higher than the fixed point. So it should be in this regime. Here we use 0.13. Then we can get the oscillation. Now, at this time, we stimulate the mechanically stimulate the central cell. So here, see the calcium is fixed in a high plateau like this, and their time scale is about 130. So did you measure longer?
Yeah, it continues.
Continues. How about that? Our data suggests that after 230, there should be some oscillation. And if we keep this constant, if you your glutamate is always there, that's our model of prediction. And here you see the mechanical stimulation, the oscillation frequency increase. We can see the similar behavior here. Now, this we should see. Suppose the glutamate is too high, then the mechanical stimulation induces a higher calcium concentration, similar like this. So, do you have any comment?
What would you say is happening with IP3 during that?
The IP3 is like that. First you add the glutamate, then the IP3 is in the oscillation regime. It's in a small oscillation because we consider the calcium induced IP3 generation. So, but because that term is small, so we can see a small oscillation as maybe in this regime, small oscillation with the small amplitude oscillation. Now, if we mechanically stimulate the central cell, then there is a large IP3 concentration diffuse from that cell, that stimulated cell, to the network. And then, but say similar as the data showed in Okay, similar showed in this figure. Here they relax to the fixed point, but in that case, because we have the glutamate, so the baseline is larger than this one, but the similar behavior like this. Yes, so with time the glutamate, the concentration is decreasing, right?
But the pictures from the signs they were from our value, the signal is getting
dropped. Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So you would have to change, if you put that in your model, it may look different.
Yeah, here we always keep it a constant, yeah. So based on our model, we have two main predictions. One is that in the red glial cell, there is a small calcium-induced IP3 degeneration. Not too much, not too large. If the regeneration term is too large, then the wave can spread to the entire cell, not a local responding calcium wave. Now, this term can cause a prolonged wave responding to the mechanic stimulation. It can also generate a large bistable regime. So, naturally, our second prediction is that the glial cell has a bistable dynamics. Such a bistable dynamics can generate a prolonged calcium plateau in the cells nearby the mechanically stimulated cell. Now, we can compare if we consider the calcium-induced IP3 generation term, or we can block it in our model. Just let this equals zero. And then we can see the bifurcation diagram is quite different. Here, the Fourier oscillation regime, almost all of the oscillating regime is bistable, but here, it's only more than half. Now, here, if we compare the point model responding to the same IP3 pulse stimulation, it means we have a large IP3 generating rate for a short period of time, and then we block it. So this here, for this one, this is IP3. If we consider the calcium-induced IP3 regeneration term, the IP3, first, due to the pulse stimulation, it goes to a large value and they decrease due to the degradation term. But it's stopped here at the fixed point for a long time. And so we can see a long duration, prolonged high calcium plateau. The wave is lasting more than 900. But if we block the IP3 regeneration term, the IP3 decreases to the fixed point fast, and the calcium wave is less than 250. So although we consider this term is quite small, but they can induce a prolonged calcium responding wave. Now if we consider the CL network, I showed you this data, and here we block the IP3 regeneration rate. And we can see that the duration of responding calcium signal is about 230. Now if we block it, it becomes 140. And the high calcium plateau in this case is 170. But if we block the IP3 generation term, it's only 100 pen. So this paper suggests that the IP3 regeneration term and the bistable dynamics is important to get a prolonged calcium responding wave. Okay, finally, conclusion. We propose the glial cell network model with the IP3 diffusion between cells. We can, based on model, four different types of stimulation can be reproduced. And we predict there is a small calcium-induced IP3 generation term. And also, the cell has a bistable dynamics with subcritical hop bifurcation. Now, thanks. I would like to thank Peter Yong, professor, my boss. I'm his postdoc. This project is supported by NSF. I also would like to thank Ofka, Nakali, and Zen. They are PhD students of Peter Yong. Peter Yong was when I did this research, Peter Yong is here, but through the email and through the telephone, he gave me a lot of good suggestions. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, I like the idea of the different phospholipase C isoforms are contributing to the pattern of the calcium signaling in different ways, and that's, I'll try and pick up on that theme this afternoon, because trophic factors like EGF activate a different form of PLC, and that may be something also that's important under different circumstances. But I think your model works pretty well to explain, you know, a lot of the behavior that we see, and I think it does fill in some of the gaps that were left by Sneed's model.
Thanks.
That's the comment.
But one should be able to test it quantitatively. I mean, by really looking at the spatial response quantitatively, you know, by going to different points in space and seeing what you predict. Because your model, it seemed all these things were pretty sensitive to exactly where you made the observation. And your model makes predictions for that. So I think it would be useful to try to test it more quantitatively in terms of the space-time response.
Okay, thanks.
May I say something to that? Well, ideally that's true. Practically there are problems with that because of these cells are not, each cell is individually different. If you make a measurement at a cell, let's say 50 micrometer from the stimulation site, you may get some response. If you measure it 50 micrometer in a different direction, you get something slightly different. This is very heterogeneous, and it's not clear how to really compare it quantitatively for that reason. If you had a more homogeneous type system, it's very difficult.
But then the question is, how meaningful are these predictions? I mean, somehow on average, if you make predictions for what one will see at different distances, and the comparison between the experiment and the theory is not very convincing. It seems to me, to make it more convincing, one would want to really see what the distance dependence is. If there is heterogeneity, that should be folded in.
Okay. And then we need more data from Charles or Sanderson. Yeah.
I mean, the kind of prediction we're doing is that they are semi-quantitative. I mean, this bifurcation term allows you to actually make qualitative predictions of what types of waveforms you
get. And those qualitative predictions should be tested in a way which brings out the fact that qualitatively you do get this kind of you are able to get these different things, even though things might be very heterogeneous.
Yeah, okay. When we try to develop the model, our experimental data is mainly from the references. I'm not sure, do you have any more data or some other patterns, responding patterns?
Well, the ideal thing would be to have something that directly specifically inhibits phospholipase D, the calcium-induced IP3 term there. And there isn't, unfortunately, an inhibitor that specifically inhibits that isoform of phospholipase C.
This is the new
that's the term, that's the different PLC isoform. But
suppose compare this, right? Are you seeing
but that? One thing that you could do, think about, would be because that term requires calcium, you can artificially increase calcium levels using other methods and see what that does to that term, to the PLC the delta term, and so that would be something that experimentally would be pretty straightforward to do. And to some extent that happens in that glutamate where you add glutamate first, or where you're using combinations of stimuli. But I don't have any. I mean, just I can't think of anything that would directly tell you off the top of my head. But we certainly have lots of data that you could look at if you want to.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. So when we work on this model, we think it's better to get some prediction, and they can be tested by the experiment. So suppose there is a prediction. Suppose this one. If we stimulate, we put a high IP3 in the CO, then can they show such a behavior or such a behavior?
No, but he says he can't do that.
There are animals that are that were knocked out, the delta.
That's right. Yeah, but in our model, we just simply assume that we can consider it another variable. So it's decreased, the size paper, they see their oscillation is somehow decreased. Suppose? Well, slow. Yes, you see here it suggests the beta is somehow decreasing, but here we just keep it constant. If we let this slow from this side to this side, then we can if you check this one, if we decrease this from this value to this value, then you can see the amplitude at the high at the maximum will decrease from that value to down here, and similar like this. And then we also predict that the oscillation frequency decrease from 12 to 40. And in this paper, they said that if they add the different glutamate, they can see the frequency, their range is from 10 to 35. So
it doesn't decrease while it drops. Okay, the oscillations drop and amplitude is glutamate degrading. The question is, at the same time, does the periods or does the frequency decrease?
I don't know, but
copy doesn't show that. Maybe the original paper would show that. That can be tested. That would be a no-brainer to put that in the model.
Yeah.
Okay. Any more comments, questions?
That's not the case. Let's thank the speaker again. And